The Philippines in 1987 was the first country in Asia to abolish capital punishment. But in the same section of the 1987 Constitution's Bill of Rights prohibiting capital punishment, it is stated that the death penalty can be imposed for compelling reasons involving heinous crimes. Capital punishment was restored for 12 years starting in 1993 in response to the country's increasing crime rates, and the first execution during that time period was meted on a man convicted of raping her 10-year-old daughter. You're listening to Stories After Dark, a Philippine true crime and mystery podcast powered by Anchor and released exclusively on Spotify, with new episodes out every week. This is the story of Rodessa Echegaray, who in 1994 was repeatedly raped by his father, Leo Echegaray. Listener discretion is advised due to the graphic nature of this story. Rodessa Echegaray was born on September 11, 1983. And together with her four younger siblings and their parents Rosalie and Leo Echegaray, they lived in a small house at number 199 Fernandez Street, Barangay San Antonio, San Francisco del Monte, in Quezon City, Metro Manila. It all started in that house one afternoon in April 1994, when Rodessa's mother Rosalie was out on a gambling session. 10-year-old Rodessa was looking after her three brothers who were 6, 5, and 2 years old respectively when Leo ordered the boys to get out of the house. As soon as they had left, Leo dragged Rodessa inside his room, and before she could even ask what her father was doing, he placed himself on top of her and forcefully penetrated her vaginally. At one point, he even asked her if it felt good. Rodessa told him to stop because it was painful, saying, quote, "Tama na papa, masakit," end quote. Leo ignored her plea, and when he was finally finished, he threatened to kill Rodessa's mother Rosalie if Rodessa told her what he had done. The rape happened 3 more times, all while Rosalie was out of the house, and Rodessa kept her father's abuse a secret because he was high on drugs most of the time, and she knew that in that condition, he could very well follow through on his threat to kill her mother. In July 1994, after Rodessa was raped for the 5th time, she finally decided to tell someone, and that someone was her maternal grandmother Asuncion Rivera, who in turn informed Rodessa's mother, Rosalie. Rosalie brought Rodessa to their barangay captain to report everything. Then they went to the police precinct where Rodessa executed an affidavit. In her testimony, she said that the sexual assaults only happened during the time Rosalie was pregnant. Rodessa was then accompanied to the Philippine National Police Crime Lab, where she was medically examined. And according to Dr. Maria Cristina B. Freira, the medical legal officer who examined her, Rodessa was in a, quote, "non-virgin state as evidenced by the presence of laceration of the hymen," end quote. When the case was brought to trial at the Quezon City Regional Trial Court, Branch 104, the defense tried to paint an altogether different story, one that involved a disputed plot of land and a love triangle that revealed Rodessa's true parentage. The first witness the defense presented was Rodessa's mother Rosalie, who said that the rape incidents were nothing more than the product of the dirty mind of her mother Asuncion, who wasn't the real mother to her. Rodessa was actually Rosalie's daughter with a man named Conrado Alfonso, who was the paramour of her own mother Asuncion. Alfonso had a plot of land at the Madrigal Estate National Housing Authority Project in Barangay San Antonio, San Francisco del Monte, Quezon City, and he co-owned it with Leo Echegaray as evidenced by an NHA certification. Alfonso waived his right over the lot in exchange for Leo, quote, "accepting the fact that he is the father of Rodessa to simulate the love triangle and to conceal the nauseating sex orgies from Conrado Alfonso's real wife," end quote. Additionally, Rosalie claimed Rodessa's original complaint against Leo was attempted homicide as he had poured alcohol over the girl's body and tried to set her on fire. But Rodessa substituted the crime of rape instead at the insistence of Asuncion. Later, Rodessa supposedly executed an affidavit of desistance, which was a written statement under oath that she was no longer interested in pursuing her complaint against Leo. And when Asuncion found out about this affidavit, she placed Rodessa under the custody of their barangay captain, forced the rape story on her, and coached her in answering her sworn statement. This, according to Rosalie, was motivated by greed, so that when Leo gets executed for the heinous crime of rape, ownership of the land at the Madrigal Estate NHA project would return to her live-in partner, Alfonso. Leopilo Echegaray testified on his behalf, confirming Asuncion's supposed motive of wanting to get her hands on the land. He stated that he could not have raped Rodessa as he considered her as her own daughter, and that even if he did rape her, his penis was too large and would have ruptured a 10-year-old's vagina. Moreover, as a painter contractor, he was painting the house of a certain Divina Ang of Barangay Vitalis Parañaque, which was 3 hours away from his house, and he had the contract of services to prove it. Leo was adamant that this was all a plan masterminded by Asuncion, who had previously trumped up a charge against him for drug pushing. He had pleaded guilty to the lesser offense of using drugs, and his sentence of just being confined at a rehab center irked Asuncion, as she had wanted Leo to receive the death penalty, and with this alleged rape she was once again trying to implicate him in a crime punishable by death. The defense presented two more witnesses who portrayed 10-year-old Rodessa as a precocious and hypersexual child. According to a Mrs. Punzalan, who was the laundry woman and part-time babysitter of the Echegaray family, she had seen Rodessa reading books about sex, as well as Bulgar, a local tabloid paper that often had sexual content. She had also witnessed Rodessa masturbating, which was corroborated by the fourth and final defense witness, Silvestra Echegaray. According to Silvestra, Rodessa was fond of spending time with friends of ill repute, and she had tried to correct Rodessa's hypersexual tendencies, scolding her when she once saw the girl watching an X-rated videotape. On September 7, 1994, the regional trial court ultimately lent credence to Rodessa's straightforward testimony, as she seemed to have no ill motive to falsely testify against Leo. Leo Echegaray was convicted of statutory rape, and with capital punishment having been restored a year earlier for heinous crimes, Leo was given the death penalty. His sentence was automatically reviewed by the Supreme Court, and during this review, Leo sought the reversal of the lower court's verdict through the assignment of three errors: that the lower court failed to appreciate the sinister motive of Rodessa's grandmother Asuncion in supposedly orchestrating the rape charge against him; that the healed lacerations on various parts of Rodessa's vaginal wall could not have been due to Leo's, quote, pumping of the penis, end quote; and that Leo's alibi that he was in Parañaque, Metro Manila during the first supposed incident of rape was ignored. The Supreme Court, however, wasn't convinced that Asuncion orchestrated a grand plan to have her granddaughter file a rape case against Leo, so that Asuncion and her live-in partner Alfonso would get the title to the disputed plot of land when Leo gets executed for rape. With regard to the second supposed error, medico-legal examiner Dr. Freira testified that the healed lacerations on Rodessa's vaginal wall were consistent with having been raped for the first time in April 1994, which was 3 months before the time she examined Rodessa in August. And with regard to the third supposed error, Leo's alibi was dismissed as his contract of services for a multi-day paint job in Parañaque wasn't definitive proof of his whereabouts at the time of the crime. As a desperate final attempt, Leo questioned the penalty imposed by the lower court by declaring that he was only the lover of Rodessa's mother Rosalie, but he was neither the father nor stepfather of the girl. Upon direct examination, however, Leo had admitted that he had treated Rodessa as his real daughter and had provided her with food, clothing, shelter, and education. And as it can be recalled, he even initially claimed that he could not have raped Rodessa as he considered her as his own daughter. The Supreme Court also noted that Rodessa had been using Leo's last name Echegaray, not Rivera, which was her mother Rosalie's maiden name, and not Alfonso, which was her biological father's surname. Rodessa had also been referring to Leo as Papa, which was reason enough to conclude that Leo was a father figure to her, whether he was her biological father or otherwise. Finally, simply being Rosalie's live-in partner still qualified him for the death penalty, because to paraphrase Republic Act No. 7659 or the death penalty law, the death penalty shall be imposed if the crime of rape is committed when the victim is under 18 years of age and the offender is a parent, ascendant, step-parent, guardian, relative by consanguinity or affinity within the third civil degree, or the common law spouse of the parent of the victim. With Leo being Rosalie's common law spouse, his death sentence was confirmed by the Supreme Court on June 25, 1996. The decision was reaffirmed the following year in 1997 when Leo's motion for reconsideration filed through his new lawyer, Theodore Te of the Free Legal Assistance Group or FLAG, was dismissed for lack of merit. The country was divided in its views of the death penalty. There were many who agreed with the Supreme Court's decision, and there were others who, clinging to religious beliefs, viewed the death penalty as a sin. Some lawyers questioned its usefulness as a crime deterrent, and human rights activists described it as a punishment only for the poor and powerless, which according to them comprised 90% of the convicts on death row at the time. Leo was scheduled for execution on January 4, 1999, and there was media frenzy as street demonstrations were held everywhere, protesting the decision to move forward with the sentence. On the day of the scheduled execution, Leo was reported to have broken down and cried while confessing to the prison chaplain he had befriended, Roberto Olaguer, and while hearing mass in the execution chamber. There were reports, however, that Leo remained remorseless as he even watched a pornographic film the night before. At noon of January 4, 3 hours before his scheduled execution, Leo was about to have his last meal when he was told that the Supreme Court had ordered a last-minute stay of execution. According to the Supreme Court, there were indications that Congress was rethinking the wisdom of imposing the death penalty, so Leo was given a reprieve until June 15, 1999, which gave him an additional 5 months to live. President Estrada, who had repeatedly rejected appeals for clemency, was upset by the Supreme Court's decision. The same sentiment was shared by First Lady Luisa Ejercito and Vice President Gloria Macapagal Arroyo, who on January 11, 1999, joined a crowd of 3,000 in Makati, Metro Manila, as they marched in sympathy with Rodessa. The Supreme Court scheduled a January 19 hearing on the government's petition to shorten Leo's reprieve. Still in death row, Leo waited for Congress to make up its mind amid public pressure to abolish the death penalty, but it ultimately voted not to revise the law, and the Supreme Court ordered Leo's execution to proceed. Leo's new date of execution was set on February 5, 1999. On February 4, Leo's lawyers made a last-minute appeal to postpone it, but the request was rejected by the Supreme Court. More than 100 Catholic priests, nuns, and laymen wearing black masks and nooses around their necks marched to the presidential palace to protest the execution. Even the European Union and the Vatican appealed for clemency, but President Estrada remained steadfast about his decision, resisting even the Pope himself, stating that it would let future rapists know that his administration meant business. He was so serious about his decision that he ordered to cut the hotline between the presidential palace and the prison, as he would not be calling the prison director for a last-minute pardon. At dawn of February 5, 1999, a Friday, the 38-year-old Leo Echegaray was escorted out of his maximum security cell at the New Bilibid prison in Muntinlupa. Nearby schools were closed and there was extra security around the prison to hold back the large crowd of reporters and demonstrators that included both death penalty protesters and supporters like those from the Volunteers Against Crime and Corruption organization. Some reporters and photographers were already inside the prison though, and they photographed Leo as he was led to the death chamber of the maximum security compound, holding a Bible in his handcuffed hands and wearing a button that said "Execute Justice, Not People," and an orange wristband distributed by election campaigners for Estrada, the president who was steadfastly pushing for his execution. At around 2:45 p.m., the blue curtain of the small public gallery was drawn open, and spectators watched through the one-way mirror as Leo was strapped onto the gurney and hooked to a heart monitor and intravenous saline drips on both arms. Leo spoke his last words into the microphone that hung above him. Quote, "Sambayanang Pilipino, patawarin ako sa kasalanang ipinaratang ninyo sa akin. Pilipino, pinatay ng kapwa Pilipino." End quote. Translated, he meant, quote, "People of the Philippines, forgive me of the sin which you have accused me, a Filipino killed by fellow Filipinos," end quote. As he spoke, phlebotomists by his side gave each other a signal, and as they pushed the contents of 3 syringes into Leo's bloodstream, the first to paralyze, the second to sedate, and the third to stop the heart, spectators inside the public gallery continued to pray the rosary. At 3:19 p.m., Leo's heart monitor showed a flat line, and 2 doctors confirmed this with a stethoscope and announced that Leo Echegaray was dead. As churches pealed their bells outside, Leo's sister Tess and a woman named Zenaida Javier, who were both watching inside the public gallery, wept even louder at the official announcement. Leo had married Zenaida in prison on December 22, 1998, barely 7 weeks earlier, and Leo had given her a message to read after his death, declaring that the government had killed an innocent man and that the death penalty should again be abolished. Leo's execution was quickly followed by others, with the next one involving a mishap where President Estrada decided to grant a last-minute reprieve but informed the prison authorities too late. In March 2000, Estrada suspended the death penalty to honor the Christian millennium, though executions resumed again in 2001. In that same year, Estrada was ousted in the Second People Power Revolution, and his successor, President Gloria Macapagal Arroyo, on the eve of her visit to the Vatican 5 years later in 2006, signed Republic Act No. 9346, finally abolishing the death penalty. To this day, what most headlines say, and what many people know about this case, is not that 10-year-old Rudessa was repeatedly violated, and at one point even made a drug courier by her stepfather, but rather the fact that her stepfather Leo was the first one executed in the country in the more than 2 decades since the first abolition of the death penalty. There are no sources online as to where Rudessa is today, but in 2006, when she was 22 years old, she shared her sentiments to the public when the death penalty was abolished. She considered herself lucky that she got justice for herself, but expressed concern that the number of crimes would increase with the death penalty now repealed. Bills have since been revived in the Senate, seeking the reinstatement of capital punishment. But whatever the outcome may be, victims of heinous crimes like Rudessa would all hopefully get the justice they deserve. Thank you for listening to Stories After Dark, a Spotify exclusive powered by Anchor. This story was suggested by a listener with the Instagram handle Maria Tabitha Valdez, and this episode was written, narrated, and produced by me, Derek. Music is by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com. Stay tuned next week for a new episode, and to make sure you're updated about the show, please follow Stories After Dark on your Spotify app as well as on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. If you'd like to see the references used for this episode, suggest cases, send personal stories, or further support the show, you can go to storiesafterdark.ph for more information. All of the links are in the episode description.